Absolutely. This is something that can be taught, and it's something that I do emphasize once I help people open up their intuition. Like, the first stage of opening up your intuition is really trusting it to make decisions that are really aligned for you, that are going to lead to really favorable outcomes, and that are going to put you in the right place at the right time, and that are going to help you manifest. Like, that's kind of like, let's call it stage one of intuition. And then you can use that same channel to open up even more. And of course, like, I guess it's optional. If you don't want to do it, you don't have to, of course, but you could then receive additional information for other people, and you can meet like your spirit guides, and you can meet angels, and you can meet people that have passed, and all sorts of like spiritual entities that are here in the spirit of love, that are here to help you and support you and give you guidance that you can't see. Welcome back to the Magic of Transformation podcast. I am your host and your coach, Stephanie Zeller. Oh my goodness. Wow. I'm so excited to bring you this episode. I've been wanting to bring you an episode like this for a while. In this episode, I go really deep. I tell you parts of my story, parts of my evolution that I've never shared before. And I'm so excited for you to tune in. Now, today the tables are turned and I am being interviewed by Stacey Milrainey. Stacey is a multimedia artist with a background in marketing and brand strategy. She's worked with well-known brands like REI, and she's currently a fine artist and a freelance creative director and art director living in the Pacific Northwest. I really wanted an opportunity to share more about my own personal spiritual awakening. And that is what this episode serves as. So I really, really hope that you enjoy it. I'm going to have Stacey back on the show at some point. She will be taking my course, Intuition and Beyond, which starts at the end of this month, October of 2025. If you haven't signed up for this course yet, you definitely should join the party. It's going to be so much fun. I would just ask that you listen to this episode with an open heart and an open mind, and if it inspires you, pass it along to somebody that you know. Without further ado, please enjoy.
You are an enigma, and when I try to explain you to people, I'm kind of like, where do I begin? How do I say what this person is, you know? And
Yeah, because you used to describe me as a psychic dentist.
Right. And I still kind of do, but that's so not accurate, you know? But it's like, how do I explain your story? How does anybody explain your story? Okay, so you and I met back in 2018, and I met you as a dentist, prosthodontist. I had this odd predicament that I needed a specialist for. I was talking to different people. I walked into your office. Who was waiting for you? You walked in, and I had this instant connection with you that it was kind of unexplainable. But you seemed all the things I needed in a doctor. You were confident and educated, experienced, very compassionate, to the point. And I felt this energy from you. And I knew I could trust you. And we started the long 6 month
Treatment.
treatment. And so you and I got to know each other through that. And I have always been fascinated by somebody who comes from the science, the math and science side, who is interested in this realm and not just interested, but passionate about it.
When you say realm,
I suppose the mystic realm and the spiritual realm, intuition, psychic, that I mean, these days I am more referring to the whole category as collective consciousness, whatever that is and becomes. But I'm fascinated. I've been fascinated by that world since I was little. But when a doctor becomes interested and knowledgeable and has a gift for it, that is super exciting for me. and it's different.
Hmm.
So I'm going to pretend like I'm doing a little feature story on you and just ask some questions because I know a little bit about your background. But just for anybody who's listening, maybe we just start early childhood and go to now.
Yeah.
So you were born in Texas, like a little bit about your growing up years.
I was born in Kansas, actually.
Oh, okay.
I
Shows what
was
I know.
like, yeah. Close. Yeah, I was born in Kansas. I think a really traditional home, raised super Christian. You know, we really did like go to Sunday school, go to church every Sunday. So I think that in a way that opened me up to spirituality. And I was very religious for a long time, but I always gravitated towards the mystical side of Christianity. So I always just was like reading the Christian mystics. So I think my heart was always longing for a lot of expansion that the mystics provided. There were more questions from the mystics than answers, I guess. And there was like a dancing with the questions and a little bit more ambiguity that I enjoyed.
When you say there were questions from the mystics, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, like the mystics would ask more questions. I feel like I was always drawn to people that were curious and open to their mind changing and open to mystery and open to exploring more and always kind of expanding and growing versus I think sometimes it's easy to find in not just in religion, but in anything, it's easy to find a dogma that feels comfortable and safe to you and then think you have all the answers. And then what ends up happening inevitably in every situation where somebody adheres to a dogma is they get really closed-minded. And that's just not something that ever drew me. Like I was always questioning.
I mean, I think that is what you and I have in common too.
Yeah, for sure.
It is interesting because I think black and white thinking is so much easier. You know what's right, you know what's wrong. The ambiguity of all the shades of gray can be time consuming, but it's far more interesting, right? And we all know
Yeah.
it's nothing is black and white. There's a billion facets of everything. So,
This, I think it's worth saying. I think it's interesting if you let yourself have like a curious mindset, like you certainly do, and you play there. But I think for a lot of people, it feels unsafe,
yes, agreed.
you know, and they haven't learned how to like have fun there. And instead, when there is ambiguity, people tend to defend in that energy.
This question gets away from the like telling your story in a linear.
Well, maybe it doesn't have to be linear.
I am curious though if that mindset of being okay with ambiguity and looking at all the different sides of everything versus I want the answer, I know what's right and I know what's wrong. Is innate? Are we born? Are our brains born differently? You know, I mean, and I tend to think they are because I think it's like creative people also tend to be more comfortable with ambiguity and looking at things in different ways. I mean, I have three brothers and we have very different brains. Two of them are black and white thinkers, and two of us are kind of more holistic or more comfortable with ambiguity.
I mean, in my experience coaching people and helping them like personally evolve and transform, a lot of times black and white thinking is a sign of emotional maturity.
Immaturity.
Yeah. And so it's done because there is a defensive energy and there's not a deeper connection to like maybe their authentic self. I'm not talking about your brothers in particular. I'm just saying like in general, when I work with people, when I coach them and they start to get more of a feel of who they authentically are versus who they think they should be, there's a letting go. There's like the tightly gripped hand starts to open and I see people move into more gray thinking. Like there's less of that kind of quick reactive judgment
Mm.
that black and white thinking tends to accompany, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, yeah, I agree that I think certain people are just more prone to, I want to say almost like rule breaking or thinking outside of the box or asking challenging questions. But I also think everyone, the more adaptable and resilient you are, and the more emotionally mature you are, the less you're trying to defend. So the more you can be curious.
Are your parents, I'm thinking about your background, and I'm curious to know why some people's brains are more open to the mystic and open to different possibilities. And I think you and I share that openness. Are your parents the same way? Are they open-minded and looking at multiple possibilities? I mean, I guess I'm wondering, like, did you inherit that from them?
Sure. I would say in certain ways, like
Mm.
my dad is a rule breaker and tends to challenge people if things don't make sense to him. So there, I think I did see him kind of thinking outside of the box, like, oh, why is everybody going in that line when we could just walk over here? You know, like that kind of thinking, just in small and big ways. And then my mom is extremely religious, but I think what I took from that, I guess, is a curiosity about religion and spirituality.
Her interest made you.
Yeah, just seeing her devotion, her devotion to it made me, well, probably, I don't know if it like, I mean, I guess I just witnessed it. So I think there was a part of me that then probably opened to curiosity around it, right?
Yeah. The career that you chose first is really interesting to me in that you it's a pretty big pivot from what you're doing now. And you, when I met you, you were at the top of your game in digital dentistry. You were a speaker, you were on cutting edge surgeries and doing a lot of research in that field. I also I should say my dad is a dentist, so I'm also like
Yeah.
I have knowledge and interest and just a background a little bit just watching him. And I'd love to know how you chose that first career and why you chose that.
Yeah, I remember a time. I mean, I assisted my dad as a, he's an oral surgeon. So I was assisting him a lot growing up. And then I remember going and watching other dentists, and I liked the way they were working with their hands. That was, I think, ultimately what drew me to it. And then there was a time in college where I was oscillating between becoming a psychologist and becoming a dentist. Ultimately, I just landed on dentistry. I think partially because at the time it felt safer to me. It felt more financial, like, oh, it'll be more financially secure. And maybe it also felt a little bit more familiar. And I also worried that psychology, like becoming a psychologist, would fatigue me, like emotionally. So yeah, I mean, I want to say I did take a lot of time to think about it, but at the time I didn't have the skills to think about it in a really sort of deep existential way. I didn't know I was living off of so much conditioning and programming and like shoulds. I thought I was like pretty much everyone thinks at that time that, you know, for most of their lives, they're living as their authentic self. So I just thought I was being my authentic self. And I was trying to make the decision, but I think there were too many layers on top that I really couldn't access my authentic self at that time.
You were deep in that career for how long?
Well, I did 4 years of dental school, and then I was a general dentist for 4 to 5 years, and then I went to my residency for 3 years, and then I practiced for a few years. So I guess like 10, 15 years.
And you and I met at a time when you were questioning if that was your life's purpose, I think, right?
Yeah.
And so you made the transition when we knew each other. It was after my treatment, fortunately. But I'm really curious about the specific things, like in that 1 year time period that led to your ultimate departure from that field.
Yeah. I ended up going back and specializing because ultimately, I kept getting bored and uninspired. And so I specialized, which was a really grueling 3 years. And then I came out, and then it was like, I think I was constantly searching for things that would creatively light me up. So I was speaking, I created a podcast, I was trying to create new techniques in dentistry. I had a big social media following. I was trying to like make it creative and interesting and exciting. And it was like, I felt like I was on a roller coaster because I would start on something new. It would feel fun and creative for a certain period of time. And then I would crash out again and I would be feeling uninspired again. And also in my head, I thought, I'm going to feel amazing when I've reached that pinnacle in this field, which is pretty much everyone thought like when you become a really great expert and you speak on stages, like that's when you know you've made it. And I did this speaking engagement, I think like 2017, maybe 2018, probably 2017. And it was like a big speaking engagement because I spoke out something that was more like vulnerable for me. And it was like a big leap. And then I remember coming back to my office afterwards, the weekend or the week after, and just having this like sinking feeling like, is this it? Like I did all the things I wanted to do and I don't feel amazing. And that was like really the tipping point of, okay, something is off. And this constant chasing and running up the mountain and trying to create all of these other projects and taking more courses and all the things aren't doing it. And then that's when I started going on like an inner journey.
And what did the inner journey look like? Or actually, more specifically, what did it start as? You had this epiphany, or you had this realization that your first chosen career was not doing it for you, and you were going to step away from that. What did you initially start doing, like very tactically?
I did, it was kind of a bunch of things at once. I went into really deep therapy. So I went and saw a Jungian psychoanalyst who I specifically wanted someone that would take me back and deal with things in childhood because I'd done therapy my whole life. And I felt like I wasn't getting to some core issues. So I went to someone that had knowledge of how to do that from a Jungian perspective and also from an IFS perspective. And so and she also did EMDR. So we started doing really, really deep work in that container. Then I also had a coach and started receiving coaching. And then I also started working with a somatic experiencing practitioner
You did this all at the same time.
all at the same time.
You dove deep.
Yes, and I was depressed. Like I had cried, I had hit a wall of burnout where, what had kept me going was the belief that when I got to the top of the mountain, I would have everything I wanted. And I got to the top of the mountain and it wasn't there. And I sort of crashed out at that point. And, at that point, I realized I wanted to probably leave my career, although I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I also realized at the same time that I wanted to leave my marriage.
That's a lot, all at the same time.
Literally
How
within
long was
one
that?
month, I left my career and or I left my office and my marriage in 1 month.
I do remember that. I do remember that. And this dive into all those different modalities to really investigate yourself and crack some more stuff open, I suppose. What was the time frame of that? I mean, like it was that a 1 year, 6 months, like what
Oh
was
God, no. I mean, that was a multi-year experience where then I started working and doing other things on top of that. Like it was like I had just opened the door. And I also, because I left clinical dentistry, I started for a year, I made all of my money just from speaking. I had a lot of time during the day. And so it actually became my full-time job. So doing personal inner work became my full-time job. I literally would do like 30 to 40 hours of inner work a week. Like it was insane the amount of inner work I did. However, also that's what I now teach. So my personality type is to try every single possible way, try all the tools, all the practitioners, find what works best, and then make what works best even better. And that's like my courses now. So I feel like that kind of tedious deep dive isn't necessary for everyone. It It was for me because ultimately, like, my path was to teach it, and I can't teach it well if I don't experience it all first and figure out what actually works.
Right. You've kind of done a, you've done a ton of the research for us, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. When you left, I mean, I'm personally, I'm curious, you know, this about the stigma around the metaphysical realm. And I'm curious if, you know, it's kind of a 180 in a way, you know, from my perspective, it's a little bit of a 180 from, you know, where you were, digital dentistry, to something that's the opposite of science in some ways.
Well, okay, so I mean, the interesting thing is, like, I think a lot of what I do at the core is personal transformation work, which is rooted in neuroscience and psychology.
Okay.
And then on top of that, I in certain programs of mine, some more than others, I infuse the metaphysical. So, like, for instance, in my career course, I teach four enormous modules on manifestation. And I do teach it from a quantum physics, neuroscience, psychological, and metaphysical perspective because it applies to all of those. And then, like, of course, in my intuition course, that's all metaphysical. So I feel like there's really a scale in terms of where certain courses fall in terms of the metaphysical. But something that I found in studying and coming from the sciences and studying different aspects of the metaphysical is it is scientific.
True. Right.
But
Sorry, I missed. Yeah, that's true. I
people don't think of it like that. And that's the
correct.
problem. Like that is where the stigma comes in, is a lot of people are okay with organized religion. But if you go out, like, so when I say people, I mean like people from the scientific field are okay with organized religion. But a lot of times if you go outside the bounds of organized religion, all of a sudden you're not normal or you're fringe. I do think that's changing though.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are open-minded. I mean, a lot of my clients are super curious and open-minded, so, and they're from scientific fields.
Why do you think it is changing now? The less of a stigma or becoming more mainstream. Why do you think it is changing now?
I mean, I think first of all, it's just part of our time. Like, I think this was probably always destined to happen, to that people start waking up. I think that more people are waking up and more people are speaking out loud about it, and that's creating a collective shift. I think that something like COVID really jolted people awake a little bit more and had them become, like, people are now more self-reflective. And then I think that the telepathy tapes has played a big role in people becoming more open. So within that few years of me diving deep into, I guess, psychological healing is also when I had had, I guess you could say, like a psychic awakening. So that happened on top of all the personal healing I was doing. You know, I left religion, I left organized religion in, when was it? Like my late 20s. And then for a period of time, I kind of considered myself atheist. And then I kind of just considered myself like spiritual or just open-minded, or I just wasn't putting any, you know, I remember I read like The Surrender Experiment by Michael Singer, and he really connected to the spiritual through meditation, and he didn't put any strict dogma around what it was he was connecting to. And I think that's what really resonated with me at the time. And then around the time that I was going through all this deep dive to heal myself, I went out to dinner with a friend who actually was in the dental field, and he told me he was learning how to be psychic and asked if he could do a reading for me. And I was like, okay, you know, sure. And he, as he was doing the reading, my friend that had died when I was 14 came forward and started talking to him. And he started telling me all these things that she was saying. And there were certain things that he was saying that, like, he couldn't have known. He didn't even know that my friend had died. And he, like, knew her name. And so he was just telling me all this stuff. And it really blew me away. And then he said, well, you're psychic too. And I started learning from him initially how to, quote, be psychic, which essentially just means receive information, whether it be seeing it in my mind's eye or hearing it in my mind or just having a knowing or a feeling that can't be seen or heard.
I love that. And I remember that now. And that's kind of what it was almost like it gave you permission or the insight or like started the flywheel, right?
I hadn't, well, I had, yeah, I had never even thought of, I mean, I'd always been intuitive. Like I'd always been intuitive and felt like I had a line on my intuition. You know, when I was in religion, I thought I was just like talking to God. Like I thought that's what that information was. And in a way you could say the field is God. Like there's different words around it that work. But yeah, so, but I never thought about like, I guess the difference was what he was doing is he was creating a space to do it on demand. Like, hold on, I'm just gonna tap in right now to something you can't see and give you information. And for me, my intuition had, I'd never thought about doing it like that. I had always just like waited for answers to come to me, or maybe it would come out in journaling or something like that.
So that practice was new to you. You had not had experiences with astrologers or readers or anything like that.
No, not at the time.
Okay. That was your first.
Yeah. At the time I hadn't, yeah, I at the time I didn't know anything about astrology. I yeah, like I had never been to a psychic. I hadn't even, I just it just like hadn't really come across my radar. Like I hadn't even thought about it.
So first time was in your 30s where somebody did this reading
Yeah.
and exposed you to the interesting.
Yeah, I know, 'cause it was so totally different for you, right?
Yes, for me, yeah. I mean, I was always, I mean, even as a little kid, and for me, I grew up in two different households that were not polar opposites, but pretty different. And one practiced evangelical Christianity, went to the Assembly of God some weekends, and then my mom, who I lived with full time, was doing yoga with a PBS instructor on TV and listening to Shakti Gawain tapes, right?
Yeah.
So it was hippie land and evangelical Christian. So what is my point in that?
Well, I asked you like because it's so different from my upbringing, and that's the I think that's the interesting thing is like it, yeah, I hadn't even it's not like psychic stuff had come across my radar before and I had already been curious or I had ignored it or I had written it off. I for the most part hadn't it hadn't even come across my radar. Like I just didn't I wasn't around people that were interested in that kind of thing. I just wasn't aware of it. And so when he started doing it, I was like, oh my God, what is this? Like that was fucking cool. And he was like, you can do it. And he kind of just loosely started trying to teach me, which was just kind of like clear your mind and see what comes up. And you know, now at my intuition course, I'm more specific and I help people do just that. But I think because I am naturally so psychic and intuitive, I was able to quickly tap in and do what he was telling me to do. And I think also he was holding it so lightly, like it was fun. And there was something about having that energy around it and not being unnecessarily serious that did give me so much permission to and curiosity to explore that. And then from there, I got way more into it. Like at one point I had a coach that was really psychic. I went to different courses that taught me to be psychic. I read a lot of books. I was constantly practicing. So that was all happening in tandem to the deep psychological work I was doing. And it massively supported me because it's like it connected me to literal psychic support. Like to beings or entities showing up and supporting me, to me receiving messages, to me always getting so many signs and synchronicities. It was like it, instead of walking on that kind of scary, like I'm gonna go process my trauma road, which can feel really daunting and like I don't wanna do that. And it can almost feel like you're having a psychotic break at times. Instead of just doing that totally solo, it was like I had this fishnet of psychic spiritual support that was surrounding me at all times. And in times where I was feeling like insane or like this is so hard, and I would break down crying, I would immediately be like bum rushed with psychic support, like with entities or like angels or whatever that would come and support me.
That is so cool. And yeah, that is fascinating. It's like when I hear that, I go, how can I get that? How can everybody get that? How do we do? Is that what you teach in your classes? Like,
yes.
And have other people felt the same psychic support that you are describing?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. You know, it's funny because my sister-in-law, Morgan, who you met, I remember one time I had this thing happen and I was like so devastated by it and I was so upset. And this was like when I was first learning to be psychic. I think I was maybe 6 months into really practicing. And I was, I had a sudden loss of a group of people that I was really relying on that I had to walk away from because I felt like I wasn't really being like seen and honored in that group. And she told me, well, just call on your spirit guides, like just talk to them. And I remember at the time thinking like, well, okay, it's not the same. It's like not the same as people. And she's like, what do you mean? And for her, it was because she was so psychic and intuitive. And at the time for me, as I was first learning, I could tap into that, but I hadn't yet really let myself land there and open up to receive like a lot of support. And then with time, it actually, I would say in a lot of ways feels more supportive than people do. Because they're there, you can call on that kind of support, like when you're on your bathroom floor crying, or when you're at your darkest moment, and there's so much vulnerability you can let yourself open to there, that you immediately can get support for. Whereas, like I think for a lot of us, it's more difficult to show up with other humans in that way, and in such an open way, or even like find another human like right in the moment where you need that kind of support. So to answer your question, absolutely. This is something that can be taught. And it's something that I do emphasize once I help people open up their intuition. Like the first stage of opening up your intuition is really trusting it to make decisions that are really aligned for you, that are going to lead to really favorable outcomes and that are going to put you in the right place at the right time and that are going to help you manifest. Like that's kind of like, let's call it stage one of intuition. And then you can use that same channel to open up even more. And of course, like, I guess it's optional. If you don't want to do it, you don't have to, of course, but you could then receive additional information for other people and you can meet like your spirit guides and you can meet angels and you can meet people that have passed and all sorts of like spiritual entities that are here in the spirit of love, because I specify that in my teaching, making sure you're calling forward that are here to help you and support you and give you guidance that you can't see and give you comfort. And when people really lean into that, it is truly life-changing. Like I see, it's crazy because Intuition Beyond is one of my shorter courses. It's like 8 weeks, whereas like, let's say, you know, your life's work is 10 months. But the amount of change I see in people in 8 weeks is insane. And I think the biggest change they feel is that they're supported and they trust themselves more. But I think they trust themselves more because they feel so supported. It's like, I'm good. Like no matter what, I feel like there's something here supporting me.
Can you give a specific example without compromising confidentiality? Can you give a specific example of a major change or something that has happened with somebody in one of those courses?
Well, there's other episodes I have coming out this month with them, and they talk about that.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Okay.
So there's that. Something that happens in general all the time with multiple people is they start immediately getting signs. So it's like once they start learning how to read signs and open up to receiving them, they start noticing them. So like synchronicities, or they'll ask for a specific sign and all of a sudden it will appear in the most crazy, miraculous way. For instance, like I had a client that had, it was like a red balloon was one of her signs that she had asked for to get clarity about something. And she was traveling on the other side of the world and she got out of a plane and she stepped out into this desert. There was literally nothing around. It was just desert. And she looked up and there was a red balloon floating in the air.
Unreal. Wow.
So things like that, where you're your jaw just drops and you're like, oh my God. And it's kind of an unmistakable feeling that that accompanies the sighting of the sign. And then also just like repeating numbers, people seeing stuff like that, that shows like that they're in alignment or thinking about someone and they call. There's like just little things that add up that show you like, oh, if it makes it you feel like the magic is real, like the things are really happening. And then I think there's really something to asking for support. So it's like once you connect with your intuition, opening up and asking for help. I've seen in my partner, and I don't think he would mind me sharing this, but for a while there was a real reluctance to kind of ask for help. And then as soon as he would start asking, he would get help like immediately. So like when he first started his coaching business a few years ago, if he wasn't getting a lot of clients and he would be concerned about money, he would just be like, help me. And then literally within like 12 hours, he would get a new client. It's not just because anyone right now could just be like, okay, cool, help me. And a lot of times that will, a lot of, honestly, a lot of times that will work. But I think there's also something about when you deepen your intuition and you're willing to be in a dance and you're willing to kind of co-create and you're willing to surrender to what intuition is guiding you to do, that's really when like the manifestations come in, and that's when you feel all this, you feel a lot more the flow coming your way and things going your way is when you act really in alignment with your intuition. Because you could just ask for help, but also at the same time, you're like not listening to your heart, not listening to your intuition, not following your intuition. You know what I mean? So a lot of the magic that happens in the course happens because you start to actually be able to discern what your intuition is and you start following it, and that opens the floodgates.
I love that. It sounds very similar to James Doty, the Into the Magic Shop and Mind Magic. It's like that's kind of what you're describing of being very clear and intentional and asking for these things and watching them happen, right?
Yeah, there really is when you really access your intuition. And for me, I think it really helps to not just access it in a way of what should I do, but also your subtle psychic senses, because you can pick up on so much more information there. You all of a sudden feel like you're in a different flow. And it feels similar to states of flow where, when you're lost in an activity, I'm sure you feel that painting and you just like you get out of your own way and you're in flow. But then when you really click into this, you live your whole life that way. And that's where real abundance is when you're able to get out of the way enough to kind of live in that space of open to receiving manifestations and information.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm really looking forward to taking the intuition course because it's we've heard it, we've all heard it, you've said it before, get out of your own way. Yes, but what does it actually mean and how do you practice it? And it sounds like that's what you're talking about, because, okay, and I struggle with that so much because I'm in my head and trying to create the logic around X, Y, and Z, right? And so getting out of our own way, like you're talking techniques to do that, which I think we all need.
Yes, specific techniques to do that. And I think the other thing that's nice about Intuition Beyond that I really aim to do is I aim to provide proof of your intuition, because of just the way it's structured, and also you start receiving information for other people in there just for fun. And so the course builds a lot of credibility. And the thing is that the reason you're in your own way is because you trust logic more than you trust intuition.
Because that's how we're trained, right?
That's exactly 100%. That's how we're trained. We're trained that we should trust logic. That's safer. And we should not trust intuition as much. And we should doubt it because it's not as safe as logic. So when people get an intuitive feeling that they should do something, but logic goes right directly against that, because logic is just based on past experiences. It is just based on past experiences. So if you want to drastically change your life and quantum leap, you can't trust logic at all, because logic, if it's based on past experiences, is going to keep you in the same lane. You won't be able to change anything if you only trust logic. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So in order to quantum leap, you have to be able to break free from logic and trust intuition, and intuition is going to lead you to your next level. So I give you specific techniques to do that, to start doing that, to start getting out of your own way. And that really is when people see like quantum leaps. And there's a whole bunch of things that you can do in tandem with that, you know, like regulate your nervous system and do things like therapy to try and ease, like to try and settle that overthinking mind. Cause the overthinking mind is always, it's just trying to keep you safe, you know?
Yeah.
But oftentimes it's just keeping you small and stuck.
Often, I think, yeah.
It's not actually keeping you safe.
Yeah. It's just hard to know when you're in it yourself. It is hard to know.
Yes. And that's a lot of what I teach too, is like, okay, what is real here? What is truth? What are just my thoughts? What's my overthinking mind versus like, what is my actual intuition telling me to do?
Right.
You know, so you can start to parse out the two.
Can we jump back to the phrase you mentioned a little bit ago, your spiritual awakening?
Yeah.
I guess I have a 3-part question, or maybe a 20-part question around that. But I would love to know what the most difficult part of your spiritual awakening was, if there was one, and also what you notice in other people, or what you've witnessed in other people that seems difficult in the spiritual awakening. And then maybe first, defining what a spiritual awakening is in your own words. Maybe start there. Or maybe not difficult. Maybe it's scary or fearful, or I don't know. I'd love to know your experience and then what you have seen in other people.
For me, a spiritual awakening, well, I think it can mean so many things. Number one, in a really generic sense, I think a lot of people use the word awakening in terms of just awakening to who their authentic self really is. Mm. Because so many of us grow up, I mean, all of us basically, unless you had parents that were like super conscious, grow up with so much programs and conditioning that's not actually us. It's not actually even aligned with who we are. Like fears around money, that's not who we are authentically. Those were programs. But then we end up operating out of those fears and taking actions because we're in scarcity. And so shifting into your authentic self is shifting into like, well, what would the best version of me do in this situation? Not what would the fearful version of me do? And so I think that's the first form of awakening. And I think that's a really important threshold to go through so that you can start to consciously choose and feel more free. Because I think a lot of times we don't feel free in life because we're actually living in these boxes that we got programmed in. The second form of awakening, specifically around spirituality, I think is just awakening to something more that you're connected to and a part of. And for me, it was, I guess you would call it like a psychic spiritual awakening, in that not only was I part of something bigger, but I could actually connect with aspects of that bigger thing. I could connect with beings that I couldn't see. I could talk to dead people. I can, you know, there's all these like playful things you can do, like time travel and all this stuff. I don't mean like literally move my body into a different timeline, but like psychically. So there's all these things that I can do that I was awakening to that were really rapidly expanding my mind in terms of what was possible and the kind of information I had access to, like remote viewing and all of this, like all of these things that we're not told we can do, but that everyone can do to varying degrees, depending on like what their psychic spiritual gifts are. So for me, it was really that rapid expansion of like, oh my gosh, this, and it was so cool. Like I said, like my friend brought it forward in such a playful energy. So to me, it was like so fun. Like I remember my first psychic class that I went to, it was with a group of people. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I went with my friend, but I also went with it with two of his friends who like, they were demon hunters. So they would like go into a home that had demons and they would like essentially tell the demons to fuck off. And they would do all this psychic work and energy work to remove the demons. And I was like, what? That is fucking awesome. And they were normal. Like they, like people think, oh, those people are crazy. Like, no, they acted like totally normal people, but they also just did this stuff.
This psychic spiritual awakening, was it all exciting or was any of it difficult or scary?
Yeah. So that points to your other question, right? I would say because of the way it was all presented to me and I was taught initially, it was not scary. You have total power and control and autonomy, and I teach this in my intuition class in terms of what you want to interact with and what you don't, and what you want to do versus what you don't. Like you could always just like say no or not do it, or like create a boundary, or and you get to choose what you can call in. And in fact, I would say it makes you a lot more powerful to have those skills so that you have more power with psychic situations. I think the most maybe challenging part was getting out of my own way.
Stop listening to the logic that you're trained to listen to.
Yeah, well, in order to receive psychic information, you have to literally remove your thinking mind. You have to become like, instead of a TV screen playing a show, you have to have it be like the fuzzy, like static screen of white noise. You have to train yourself to do that. Otherwise, if you're already playing a show, information cannot come in. It's like the channel is clogged.
I understand. Okay.
So you have to train yourself to do that. And I think it was challenging in that there was a logical part of me thinking like, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to do this. Or like, what if I say the wrong thing? Or like, what if I look like an idiot? Or what if blah, 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 blah. Like there's all the thoughts. And over time, you just train yourself out of them. And I think also that's where learning with a group of people is exponentially more powerful, because if you can receive information and have it affirmed by somebody else you're sitting across from, you trust it so much more, rather than like if you're just looking in the mirror and receiving information, there's nothing to affirm that. And so it literally takes like, it can take years versus what I see, you know, in my program in 8 weeks, where people like I had a couple of clients from that course come on the podcast the other day, and I asked them, were you guys skeptical when you came in? And they both were like so quick to be like, yes, very skeptical. And then I was like, when did that go away? And they said, session one.
Were you skeptical of any of it when you started?
Not skeptical in like, I think the traditional terms of skeptic, and like where people almost get hostile. You know what I mean? Like some people are like, oh yeah, prove it to me. Like, well, anyone could make that up, or any, you know, not like that. But I was discerning, I guess I would say. Like, what feels real to me? What feels aligned? What feels right? You know, it has to actually resonate with me, the info. Like, if somebody else is giving me a psychic reading, it has to actually mean something to me for it to feel like it's real, you know? Does that make sense?
It does, yeah.
There was one other part of your question, which was like, what do I see people struggling with the most? And I would say it's again, just getting out of their own way. And the reason you have trouble getting it out of your own way is because you've been trained your whole life to make your logical mind king.
And to believe what we can see.
Right.
And that's the way that we are trained,
Yeah.
right? Is what we can see is the truth. And if you can't see it, you don't know if it's true.
Right. Yeah, you have to start trusting in something bigger.
Do you think I'm using the term spiritual awakening or psychic spiritual awakening? Do you think that that happens to a person, or does the person call it to happen? Does it happen, or do you have to invite it to happen?
I think it can be either way. I mean, for me, I was in an energy of openness and an energy of, I want help. I want guidance. I want direction. I was seeing all these new practitioners. I was going on this new inner journey. So I was in an energy of openness. And I think in a way that magnetically called it to me. As I said, though, that wasn't even on my radar. Like going deeper into intuition or psychic abilities wasn't something I had ever even thought about.
It sounds like your friend doing that reading was a catalyst.
100%.
It kind of happened to you in a way, but may not have if you weren't open to it.
Right. Like 5 years before that, when I was like, okay, I know my life path and I got this shit on lockdown and I'm just going to reach this mountaintop and everything's going to be amazing once I reach that mountaintop and no one's going to get in my way. If somebody had come to me at that point and done that, I might have been like, cool, whatever, bye. Like, I don't think I would have been closed-minded to it. I think I would have been like, that was cool, but I wouldn't have really applied it to myself and been like, wait, could I do that? And then had fun with it and played with it. So I do think it requires kind of an energy of openness and curiosity. But I also think anyone can call that in. Like if somebody is listening right now and they're like, oh, that sounds cool. Like, I want to go on that journey. I want to figure out how to do that. Then that is it. That's your initiation. Like, that's the light bulb moment. And you go and you do it.
What is one thing that I could do when we get off this call? What is one thing that I can do to, I mean, I feel like I've always been open to this realm, but what is one thing that I can do to strengthen that? What's like one tiny little thing?
To strengthen your connection to your intuition?
Yeah.
Building in a pause before you make decisions, where you, instead of kind of habitually deciding things, pausing and seeing if any other ideas just come up in your mind. Because I use intuition to do literally everything. So let's say, you know, the other day, like I took my little puppy on a walk and I was going to walk down the street, and halfway down the driveway, I kind of paused. And then I had this sudden go to the park just popped into my head. And so I turned around and we got in the car and I went to the park and walked her at the park instead, which was like such a more enjoyable experience. And when I was driving down the street, there was like a guy with a pit that he didn't have very good control over. And it felt like with a puppy, I was like, that wouldn't have felt safe to me, you know, whether or not it would have been safe or not, I don't know. But I was like, oh, okay. So this was a more pleasant experience for me because I didn't have to worry about my puppy. And I listened to that before I saw the reason why, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like just pausing before you make any decision whatsoever, whether it be like lunch or a big decision, and just seeing if something else comes up in you, like another idea. And I think a lot of times intuition is going to present with an idea that is going to be feel a little bit left field or unusual, outside of your pattern, outside of the norm, and may actually challenge your logical thinking. That's actually a sign that it probably is intuition.
Do you think our species, everybody right now living, has intuitive capabilities? You know what? I know you're going to say yes.
Yeah, 100%.
So that's a dumb question.
But it's an important question.
Maybe this is leading the witness here. I just tend to think that some people are born with a stronger intuitive sense than others. But I'm curious, 10,000 years from now, will this be heightened? Will what we're experiencing now be magnified in 10,000 years in humanity? Do you think it's an evolving trait?
For sure. I mean, what I found about psychic gifts is that they're strengthened with repetition. So they're strengthened with use. So the more psychic readings I do, the better I become at them. And that goes for all psychic gifts. Like the more you practice them, the better you become. And to me, that harks back to like our physiology. It's just like the more you lift a weight, the stronger that muscle becomes. So I feel like it is actually in and through the body that our psychic senses work. But on top of that, the biggest barrier to us being more aware and psychic is the belief that it exists and we can do it. So as that's changing with things like the telepathy tape and like more people talking about, yeah, I'm psychic, it's not that big of a deal. Like I have psychic gifts, so does everybody. The more people talk about that and the more it becomes normal, the more people will start to become playful with it and actually use them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll like a ripple effect. It'll just grow. I mean, I for sure think we're headed on that trajectory.
Yeah. I mean, the telepathy tapes to me and what's happening with that population, which is autistic or kids with autism, being able to communicate without words across countries and, you know, being able to communicate with each other.
Telepathically, yeah.
Telepathically, yeah. Across, you know, hundreds and thousands of miles. And I'm just wondering, will more humans have that capability? I find that interesting. Like we have these five senses right now.
Well, you have way more senses than the five senses. I mean, like everybody can pick up on subtle psychic information.
100%. I guess it's just like the agreed upon in,
yes,
you know,
right.
2025 on Earth, humanity has these five senses, right?
Right.
The agreed upon that we all think logically. in 10,000 years or a million years, if human beings still exist, we might have 10 more.
Yeah, I think it's quite possible we're evolving that capability. And these individuals from the telepathy tapes specifically feel more to me, honestly, like evolved beings that are more evolved beings that are trying to help humanity and like taking on the form of these bodies, but they're so evolved, they're like, I don't know how to use this body. And they, you know, in the telepathy tapes, they consistently say, why would I speak out loud when so much more can be communicated with such
Right.
ease telepathically? And that is so true. Like, when you learn how to receive intuitive information telepathically, there's so much more that can download at a rapid rate because you're using your subconscious to use that, and your subconscious processes information at an accelerated rate rather than just your conscious mind and prefrontal cortex. So it's like when you're talking to someone, it's so much slower and tedious than receiving psychic information. When I receive psychic information, I receive it so fast and so much information. I receive a felt sense. There's so much that I receive in such a short period of time that could never be delivered to me through speaking.
I think that that's one of the reasons that what you are doing and the pivot from your first career to this one, I was so excited by it. And it's because I think that this sense is like just in its tiny infancy. And you personally and the people that you're teaching like have the power to accelerate it, you know? And I think there's been such a stigma with the crystal ball readers at fairs in the 19 or the 1800s, right? Who just, you don't, okay, they may have had psychic gifts, but there were also a lot of frauds and, you know, and
Yeah, for
it's like,
sure.
but I feel like it's such an exciting time to be alive while this sense is getting heightened, right? And I
Yeah.
just like, that's one of the reasons I'm super excited by what you're doing. And it's, yeah, somebody who's come from math and science and is now, you know, has the courage to go into this new unknown realm and really look at it with a, you are looking at it from a logical point of view too. It's really fascinating.
I mean, going back to like, what is the hardest part about a psychic spiritual awakening? Actually, that would be the second hardest part, is like coming out of the psychic spiritual closet about it.
And why is it hard to do that?
Well, it's only hard for people that are surrounded by people that aren't similar to them, that haven't done the same thing, I guess, right? Like, so if you were in a community of people that were already psychic and you were learning to be psychic, there's no closet then to come out of there because you're surrounded by people that already get you and already see you. But I think for me, it was such a reach. Like you said, it was like a 180 from like, okay, I'm a dentist and now I'm a psychic. It's
And
so,
yeah.
it's, and which is why when you would tell people, oh, this friend of mine is a psychic dentist, that was so catchy. Because it was like two opposites, and people were like, a psychic dentist? What?
Tell me more.
Like,
Right. Yeah. Who are the people that you learn from most slash your biggest mentors?
they've changed and evolved as I've grown on my journey. I mean, who they were in the beginning 7 or 8 years ago are totally different from, I guess, who they are now. The people that I now try and learn from the most are people that talk about awakening in a egoic sense. So the recognition that you're not just an individual person, but you are part of the whole.
And who would those people?
That would be like Byron Katie, Rupert Spira. Those are probably the two biggest. I mean, I would say Rupert Spira is probably the biggest teacher for me over the last several years. And then also I've been really into, as kind of an offshoot of that, I've been really into tantric teachings, but not tantric, sexual tantric, more like tantric in terms of feeling everything with the body. It's called Kashmir Shaivism. Yeah, that kind of thing where there's not an avoidance of the body, but of finding a sense of universal oneness through the body. So that's now, right? Like
Okay.
that's 8 years of really deep, intense work. That's where I am.
I love how many modalities you've explored. Like, if I'm curious about something, I can usually call you and say, what do you know about this? You've either tried it, you know something, you've explored it, which does help. At least it helps for me because I trust your experiences. You know, we all have our own individual experiences, but it helps guide me, right? If you've tried it or haven't or whatever. Is there a modality that you have tried that you don't like or didn't resonate with you or you're just not interested? Like that you gave it a shot and then you just said, nope, not for me.
Yeah, I would say CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, which is really popular. But in my opinion, it bypasses deeper work. And I worked with a therapist specifically for CBT for like 20-ish sessions, and I just felt like I got fucking nowhere. I was like, I feel like I'm just trying to convince myself to think other things. It almost felt like, in a way, positive thinking for me. I mean, CBT, you really break down why you're thinking a thought, and you're using logic to try and essentially reason with yourself about why you shouldn't think that thought and why you should think another one. And in a way, I felt like I was just gaslighting myself the whole time.
Interesting. Well, and it's fascinating that that's kind of that's the mainstream. Like that's basically
Yes.
what everybody knows as therapy. And for the last 40 years and probably on and on, that's what people know. And it's just like the main recognized school of thought, right? Or
It's like the main one. And I to be like, I know some people where I've seen it work well. So I'm not saying, for everybody, but I would say for the large majority of people that at least I've been exposed to and worked with, it is not doing the trick. Like that and just talk therapy, where you just go in and you just talk to your therapist and that's all you're doing. It's not that that didn't help me. Like, I think that was a nice starting point and it helped me kind of learn how to reflect, but it didn't change anything. Like, I have a recent podcast I put out with Morgan where she had been going to talk therapy for 2.5 years for the same issue. And I ended up just doing a live session with her, which we recorded, and it's on the podcast now. And at the end of it, she was like, I literally feel free from that in 40 minutes. And I've been trying to get free from that for 2.5 years. And that's the value of
Incredible.
better techniques,
Is there anything you're really interested in that you haven't tried yet that you want to explore?
I haven't done a lot of plant medicine. I don't know that I want to explore it like a ton, but I feel like that's something that I'd like to try at least a couple times. I mean, I've done like psilocybin, but I haven't done any ayahuasca.
Does that scare you, the ayahuasca?
I would be nervous for sure.
How come?
Just because it's not like a pleasant experience for people. It brings up deep things, and people usually get violently ill when they're on it. I'm sure I'd be nervous, but I mean, I've been nervous before doing a lot of shit and still done it. So,
What would your followers, people who know you, maybe your clients, what would they be surprised to know about you that they don't?
I think my followers that haven't worked in one of my containers would be surprised to know exactly what we're talking about, which is how psychic I am, which is that like I receive psychic information all the time, that I can talk to entities, that I can talk to dead people, that I can remote view. There's all these things that like I can do that I just don't talk about all the time. So I think that would be surprising. I think another thing that I've only recently started talking about more is like a deeper awakening journey, in terms of awakening to the realization that we are all one, and being on this deeper path of like, I am on a deeper spiritual path of the recognition that I'm not just this character in this play. I'm a bigger state of awareness that is experiencing life through Stephanie, but I'm not just Stephanie. And that's something that I haven't yet taught in a big way. I did start a second podcast called Awake, but I only have like a few episodes on there right now. But that's like, I think, my most dedicated path. Like the most of my devotion goes towards that path of realizing and remembering the fact that I'm not just this person, and staying connected to a bigger sense of awareness.
I liken it to one blood cell, right? Like together, the blood cells are blood, right? It's like they're all communicating. It's like we're one big pool of primordial soup.
Yes. Yeah. And like the interesting thing is, I knew that for a long time before I felt that. Actually, the first time I felt that was, oh my God, the first time I felt that was after I had met with you in Seattle. I was like getting ready to, I think, move. And I had gone over, I lived on Bainbridge Island. I had gone over to meet with you and one other person in Seattle. And then I got on the ferry to go back to Bainbridge Island. And I was at this point where I was like, I was so frustrated because I'd been doing a lot of work by then. I think I'd been doing like it for like a year and a half, a lot of deep inner work. And I still felt trapped. I couldn't describe it. I was just like, oh, like I don't like the way I feel. And I was journaling and I was like, just what the fuck, kind of was. I literally think I wrote like, what the fuck? Like I've done all this work. I don't understand why I still feel this way. And then I heard psychically, because I'd already activated that, do you want to be free, Stephanie? And I wrote it down, but when I wrote it down, I realized it could be read two different ways. It could be read like, hey, Stephanie, do you want to be free? Or do you want to be free from Stephanie? And I said, yes. And at that moment, it was like my sense of self shot out of my body. This is what it felt like. It shot out of my body. And I started looking around, and I wasn't thinking at the time, but in reflection, this is like what it felt like. And I was looking at all the cars on the ferry and the water, and I was the water. It wasn't just a cognitive, like, yeah, we're all this. It's like, I was the water. I was like, I'm the water. I'm the fucking water. Oh my God, I'm this boat. I'm all these cars. I am everything. And it was like this pervasive sense of total peace and freedom. Ram Dass has this amazing quote that he said, death is like taking off a tight shoe. And that's what it felt like. It felt like I was no longer confined to just being Stephanie. I realized I was actually everything. And I remember like tears just started like streaming down my face.
Wow.
And it was just this like pervasive, it was like the most peace I'd ever felt and joy. It was like an elation. And it was like almost a laughable, like, oh my God, this was here the whole time. And I kept thinking I was just Stephanie. That's fucking hilarious. And then it lasted the whole ferry ride. I didn't have any sense of time. But I then when I started driving off the ferry, like I remember I got a phone call and I started talking to someone and I kind of came back into Stephanie. And then my journey since then has been re-anchoring into that place of feeling. Because when you're there and you feel your sense of yourself as everything, you have crystal clear clarity about literally everything, and nothing bothers you.
Do you tap into that feeling again when you meditate? Because that sounds like a pretty intense awakening or experience, right? Like that 40 minutes or whatever.
Yeah. A lot of times when people say, I had an awakening experience, that's what they're talking about, is that kind of experience where they feel themselves as oneness. And it's like, it's so earth-shattering that you don't forget it. It's like, once you felt it, then you always want to go back to that place. It's like Eckhart Tolle had that, but then he never came out of it.
Right.
He was like sitting on a park bench and all of a sudden he was everything. And then he just got up and then he moved through the world. And then he was always that. But most of us, we don't maintain it. Then it's a journey of trying to integrate that and going back there and reestablishing that sense. But yeah, I think the best way to get there is through meditation. But also, it's happened in so many other ways. Like, I remember one time I was on a walk and I was listening to this podcast and they were talking about oneness and they just said a line and it boom, clicked. And I just shot out again. And I was actually in that state of awareness and oneness for 3 days that time.
Oh, wow. God, yeah, it is so interesting. I have that feeling, but it's fleeting. And when I meditate,
Yeah.
it might last for 15 seconds, so here and there, but it's hard to get that feeling. It's interesting though, I had COVID recently and I felt it, and I cannot explain it. The COVID experience almost felt like I was on a different plane
Yeah.
or a different, like almost a different dimension. It was very strange, but I kept feeling that over and over while I had COVID. And it was not during meditation. It was just, sitting there drawing, or it was,
Right.
but yeah, it is such a rare, interesting, cool, almost indescribable feeling.
And I feel like that's really when we've totally gotten out of our way.
Yeah, I wonder with the sickness too. And when I was little, I would have these kind of transcendent experiences when I got sick. And I wonder if it's because the brain is just, it's not working in its usual way.
For sure.
Like maybe your logic is lessened, or I don't know. But
There's been a lot of people that have had like really intense spiritual experiences when they've had fevers, or they'll like see beings or entities, or their psychic senses will be super heightened when they're sick. I actually really feel like that is part of what COVID facilitates.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, like the first time I got COVID, I felt like it was some sort of spiritual vortex.
Oh, weird.
That's just the sense I got. I was like, this is like a spiritual word. I felt like it was up leveling me.
That is so weird because I have never talked to anybody else who had that experience. It just happened. I mean, I had it last month, and I had the same feeling. I was like, is this a portal to a
Yeah.
different and then I sounded crazy, but maybe not. What do you want to see more of in the world?
Like people waking up.
What does that mean?
It means people, both people waking up to realizing that they're operating on programs and that they can choose, that they don't have to live with these glass ceilings, that they can manifest more than they ever thought possible, they can have more joy, that there's actually a path to do that versus just kind of accepting, oh, life is suffering and I can't make more money than this, or I can't do more than this. There's a lot of acceptance of that. And a lot of times that's just because like everyone around you is accepting the same thing. And so you don't realize you can reach for more. So I think number one, waking up to like your most authentic self and then living from that place. Because I feel like when people really live from that place, that's where like magic is created in the world. And for a lot of people, that is going to mean waking up also to their intuition and their kind of psychic gifts. Yeah, I just like I feel like so much of what I want to help people realize is that so much more is possible in every situation. And that maybe just because you don't see a way that more is possible doesn't mean it's not there.
Yeah, I think you're good at that. You're good at helping me see that. Like when we've had conversations and done readings in the past, like
Yeah.
I come away feeling possibility.
Yeah. That's cool.
I don't know why I care if people believe in collective consciousness or not. It's not my profession. It's not, I don't, whether people believe or not, it has no bearing on my life. But I know for some reason I am passionate about it. And I think you asked me that the other day, and I don't actually know why. But I was thinking about the types of people and the difference between people who believe in the unknown and the unseen and the non-physical, right? And it's like, how can people say 2025? We know everything there is to know about the human brain and human consciousness and our role in the galaxy and the universe. How could they possibly say that?
Yeah, well, I do think it's really fun and interesting to see you always get riled up when we talk about this because you do get like really passionate
And I don't know why.
about
Like,
well,
I
yeah,
don't
and so
care.
that's what I was gonna say. But
It's,
you
but I
do care.
don't. Because, if my brothers or, my friends don't believe that intuition and psychic skills are a new sense that is being tuned,
Well, I don't think it's a nuisance. I mean, just I think it's been around forever.
I think it's been around forever too.
But yes, you're alluding to you think it's possible that right now it's strengthening and evolving, right?
I
Yeah.
mean, how long did it take for giraffes to grow their long necks? It took like 17 million years.
Right, but there are a lot of people that believe there are ancient civilizations that were super tapped into this technology that did crazy things, like Egyptians and things like that, which maybe you should look into that. Maybe that would be interesting for you. But there's a lot of people that think that this is a lost technology. So like it did exist and then it was buried
And we lost it.
and we became psychically disconnected from it, and now what's happening is just a remembering.
Oh, I like that. It's like Idiocracy, the movie, when we just all got so stupid.
Or maybe the powers that be, like Empire, shut it down, bury the knowledge, but we got disconnected from it. And so that's a very common belief, is that there were, and I believe that too, that there were ancient civilizations that were very dialed in, that could move things telekinetically, that could talk telepathically, that they all had psychic gifts, that they did, energy healing, all of this kind of thing. And then we were disconnected from it. And now there's like a collective remembering that's occurring. And then I think things with like the telepathy tapes, these beings helping us to collectively remember. And I think we are also evolving. If you go deep into the spiritual space, for decades, people have been talking about a huge shift that's coming in 2027. And that a new kind of being is coming online, a more evolved being. And that right now we're all shifting collectively from a solar plexus awareness into a heart chakra awareness. And we're shifting collectively from 3D to 4D. And so there's a lot of that talk that right now, yes, there is a huge collective evolution occurring that is out of our hands. It's just happening through us. And it's also happening through new people that are being born. They're already more evolved.
That is fascinating to me, the 2027 thing. You know a lot about it. Are you going to do an episode or a series on that?
So I'm not one of the people that's been foretelling that. Like I just like I've heard so many people talk about it, like sort of prophesize it. And it's, there's like astrological shifts, and there's a huge thing in human design that a new type of human is coming online in 2027.
Even just the research, like,
Yeah, I wouldn't say that I'm knowledgeable enough to give a thorough like dissertation on all of that I would feel comfortable doing it, but I would say that potentially what I could do is psychically tune into 2027 and do an episode on what I'm seeing psychically.
yeah, and I'm not quite sure what people know about your background, but there's plenty of people who dabble in this realm and are coaches and are intuitive. There's a lot, but you have a really unique story and first career that is rare.
Yeah, I think so.
And I find that interesting, and that's one of the reasons, like, well, James Doty. Is it James Doty? Yeah. I mean, he's a brain surgeon, right? Like, that's a very rare combination because he is into the mystic and he's a brain surgeon.
Yeah.
Or Lynn McTaggart, who started the Power of Eight, right? Like, she's a scientist. So it's people like that who I find important in this realm because nobody, like, if I become a psychic, everybody's like, yeah, of course. Stacey Mulrainey, yeah, we all knew, she's a weirdo. Right. But people who have a science background are considered, more, I guess, for lack of a better word, normal, credible, and that's what this sphere needs, I think, to grow and to become more accepted. They don't need more people like me.
I think that's not right, but we'll agree to disagree.
Yeah, some visual artist is also like a psychic and intuitive. Like, what's the surprise in that? But that realm, and I'm talking about mysticism, collective consciousness, whatever, it's not socially accepted by the masses yet. And to get to that level, it will be someday. It will be, I have no doubt. But it's going to start with people like you and brain surgeons and Lynn McTaggart and scientists and whatever, as soon as they can get funding. Okay. Thank you. This was fun.
Thank you. I really appreciate you. Thank you so
I
much.
loved your answers and getting to know your background more too. That was really interesting.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode. If you liked it, be sure to pass it along to a friend and leave me a 5 stars wherever you listen. Don't forget that right now, my course Intuition and Beyond is open for enrollment. This course sells out fast. You can find a link to it in the show notes, or you can head to thetransformationschool.com, go over to courses and find Intuition and Beyond. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Until next time.